one reason that present raises a question: who wants a
band?
The homeless are a problem for only one reason. A present raises a question: who owns a
land?
Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To all imperialism, who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? 'Cause I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? Owns its own self. Maybe it's the Native America. The homeless are a problem for only one reason. My president raises a question: who owns the
land?
The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Your presence raises a question: who owns the
land? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is
And welcome to another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Got the new board here, and fumbling with it. Hopefully all will go well. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Robert Norris talking to you. And 3.5 hours of talk, interviews, phone calls, music, and public current events coming at you. We're very public here. And you can get public, too, by calling 427-3772. You're tuned to 96.3 FM or www.microradio.net/FRSC on the Internet. Give us a call if you want to be a part of this discussion. Coming up on the agenda today, a number of things. We had, as you may remember, in the studio, somewhat controversial figure, Claire Machado on Thursday. She's an SEIU worker. She's also a red tagger, member of the Planning Commission of the county. Talked about red tagging Camp Paradise on Thursday. She's going to be back with a co-worker talking about the settlement around noon. And there's also going to be some discussion of the utility tax repeal coming up on the city ballot, pro and con. I'd like to get the both sides out and hopefully raise the debate to another level so we can see all the issues involved and understand what's going on. A lot of interviews from the streets, which I've been kind of holding back on and are actually not having enough time for in earlier shows. I'm going to throw those on. And we got the Santa Cruz City Council's meeting is coming up on Tuesday, as it does every second and fourth Tuesday of the month. There's an anti-war resolution coming up at 5 o'clock on Tuesday. There's a five-year plan for, looks like more bureaucratic obfuscation of the homeless issue, but we'll have to look at that one more carefully. I was not able to get the full report on the web. It's often very hard to get these documents before the council meeting, and by the time you get there, it's pretty much a done deal, so it's kind of a damned if you do and damned if you don't kind of thing. And same old damn stuff. Hoping to get some call-ins from some of the council candidates. There was a hot debate yesterday, kind of a sad hot debate, actually, on KSCO on medical marijuana between Jane Bear and a WHAM person, Susan. I'm not sure what her last name is. I've actually interviewed her, and I know her, and I apologize to her for not getting her last name correctly there. I'm going to talk about some of what's going on there. And the big issue, I think, which is, again, being largely ignored, is the local failure to address the medical marijuana issue. It's being diverted onto the feds, and the feds are doing their bit as the demons of the month, and they are, in fact, of course, obviously trying to harass and pander to their right-wing fundamentalist constituency in this absurd campaign against absurd and cruel campaign against medical marijuana patients and providers. But what we really need to look at is what our local liberals, who supposedly preen themselves on supporting medical marijuana, are doing and not doing. I should say mainly not doing. As I've talked about in other shows, and as you can find on the internet if you go to the santacruz.indymedia.org website, which is the independent media here in Santa Cruz, which has a lot of good coverage of medical marijuana protests and discussion and raids and so forth. You'll find posted my analysis of how the city council and the supervisors have both sabotaged medical marijuana use here in this county, as well as, of course, furthering the drug war against recreational use of marijuana, which medical marijuana people like to separate, and indeed there is a real distinction there, but in a broader sense, the marijuana movement, by turning its attention only on one aspect, has created a situation where, you know, the drug war and the prisons have expanded instead of contracted on this issue. The number of busts each year go up, and no medical marijuana patients are safe either. I mean, it's sort of a horrible situation. We need to stand together here, and we need to stand together against the hypocrisy, the inaction, the cover-up locally. And I'm talking about Mayor Christopher Crone. I'm talking about council member and supervisorial candidate Mark Premack. I'm talking about phony baloney incumbent Marty Wormhout. I'm talking about Sheriff, I cooperate with the DEA, Mark Tracy, who claims he doesn't. And that's recently, according to medical marijuana activist Theodora Carey, marijuana activist Theodora Carey, also supports medical marijuana, no doubt, been going after local medical marijuana users independently of the DEA. Three such busts have happened either since September 11th or the early September bust of the corrals, the WHAM bust, or since the protest, I think it was since the corral bust. Bad stuff is going on, and it's an opportunity to stop it because the consciousness of the situation is high. That's the value of that big media event that happened a week ago at City Council, is that people know that there is overwhelming support for medical marijuana users and opposition to the DEA and the agencies that are trying to crush medical marijuana use and who are using the drug war as a sort of a terrorist device in their pseudo-war on terrorism incorporated, as Jello Biafra was describing it in the tape before this show came on. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. I'm going to play a little from the Becky Johnson archives. She's been out there doing some interviewing in the last month or two. And then we're going to get to other things. around noon, I guess I said, we're going to have SEIU workers who are going to be debating the settlement and talking about other issues. They should be in the studio, and I'm hoping we can get Steve Hartman, who's unregenerate, unreconstructed opponent of the city utility tax, talking about that, talking favoring utility tax repeal. As a lot of folks who style themselves liberals oppose this repeal, claiming it will devastate the social services. We're going to be discussing that issue. There's also my trial is coming up on the 27th, though it may be postponed. That's the trial of the century for blocking the sidewalk. Endless tempest in a teapot over. You offend the merchants by calling for a boycott of Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe and New Leaf Market for their errant privatization of public spaces downtown in their social cleansing efforts to go after a bunch of young people. And you get the authorities on your tail, and I've had them on my tail for the last 8 months. This endless case that won't go away, it's just an infraction. But the city seems to have spent more money and paper on this infraction than I've seen them use in any other infraction, in my experience. The infraction is blocking the flow of pedestrian traffic. And what was I doing? Setting up a barricade on the Pacific Avenue? No, I was sitting at a table. I was tabling and petitioning. And looks like we got a call here. Hi, you're on free radio.
Hello, Robert.
Hey.
Hey there. So you wanted me to talk about Santa Monica politics.
Ooh, is this the notorious Jennifer?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't recognize you, Jennifer. So you were formerly Jennifer Wagoner, and you are now... Jennifer Yellowhorse, and you're an activist who's been active in Santa Monica as a homeless person and as a peace activist and also as an activist to restore Native American rights. Gosh, you have a number of hats.
Mm-hmm.
But right now you're calling the blowing the whistle on the attacks on the food servers down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right now Santa Monica
What are the facts?
Excuse me for interrupting, but we can't really hear Jennifer.
Oh. Speak up, Jennifer.
Sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
Can we, producer, can Jennifer be heard? Say some more things,
I need
Jennifer.
To be heard.
You need to be heard there. Well, I'm rolling down my mic, and yours is up at max, so just try to speak more loudly. It's really frustrating, I know, but do what you can.
Well, at any rate, as long as people in the public can hear what we're talking about, that Santa Monica feels that the outdoor meal distribution program attracts homeless people from everywhere in the world. Everybody's coming to Santa Monica in order to get a brown bag lunch, you know, which is a sandwich, a piece of day-old bread, and a juice box.
Oh, hold it. I'm heading south. Where did you say that lunch was?
Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm. And, in fact, how many people does your lunch serve each day?
Around 250 to 300 people use the outdoor meal distribution program on any given day.
Is this a...
But there's approximately anywhere from 5 to 20 food programs that serve at different times of the week. In the parks and open spaces.
Mm-hmm. And is this an increase from, I know they tried to go after the food program 10 years ago when city attorney Bob Myers resigned rather than write a nasty law. I guess it was he resigned about the sleeping ban rather than the food ban, but they also tried to get him to write an anti-homeless no-feeding ban. And I guess the right-wingers laid off, but now they're is this the right-wingers or is this the good liberals that are coming after you?
These are the right-wing anti-homeless, traditionally anti-homeless contingent, which is comprised of fortify the entire Santa Monica area and are trying to eradicate anyone below a certain income out of their city. And because they feel that people who are poor are, you know, causing them to not make enough money in this city.
Do they have any studies that actually document that's the perennial cry of gentrifiers? But, I mean, have they presented any hard evidence for that? Essence for sleeping in his vehicle, though in Santa Cruz they're trying to avoid those arrests and stats, because I know that creates concern among some liberals and makes some liberals feel vulnerable to pressure. So are you, in the last decade, has there been an upsurge in sleeping arrests?
Well, what has happened is, in fact, a lot like what you just said. And in Santa Monica, the police are starting not necessarily to arrest people so much for these crimes, primarily because so many homeless people are now finding some form of empowerment to go through the system and fight those tickets. And they're more and more successful, you know, as the argument gets stronger for necessity for them.
And has that actually been used down there?
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, a lot of people were able to fight those successfully and, you know, and receive, you know, a small amount of justice. But then what started happening is when that started becoming, you know, the status quo for these types of citations, what they started to do is to give people infractions, parking violations, tickets that they necessarily would not be able to fight in court, or for reasons other than the most specific reason, which would be, you know, actually sleeping or, you know, camping in their vehicle. And so if a person is there for more than 72 hours, it's very difficult for a homeless person to prove whether or not they've been in a spot for 72 hours or more, mm-hmm. you know. So if you can't prove that you really weren't there for 72 hours, then the ticket holds.
But now what's happening apparently is the not satisfied with going after people in their vehicles and stopping them from sleeping, they want to kind of cut off the logistical food support so that these folks are, should we say, made leaner and meaner. It's sort of a dieting for the homeless approach.
Yeah, I guess the theory is that if you feed them, they will come,
mm-hmm.
you know. That's what the right-wing anti-homeless contingent portrays, is that these outdoor meal distribution programs, who they've portrayed as being outsiders, people who are not from Santa Monica, who come in from different cities and come to Santa Monica in order to feed the poor, they say that those people, A, should be serving homeless people in their own communities instead of coming to Santa Monica, and B, that when they do come and they serve food, they attract homeless people. And also an interesting sideline to that argument is the fact that they say that they're supporting people who are resisting social services, and that if these meals did not exist in the public, that homeless people would be more inclined to accept the social services and to go inside, to go into a shelter.
What kind of shelter does Santa Monica have compared to the total homeless population?
Well, Santa Monica has approximately 250 shelter beds, emergency shelter beds that are available, some a small percentage for women and a somewhat larger percentage for men. In Santa Monica, there are approximately 2,500 homeless people out on the streets. So for those, it's like 10 beds to 100, you know. It's really hard to say that a homeless person can have access to a shelter bed on any given night. If a police officer were to approach someone out on the street and say, and wake them up and say, you know, you need to go to a shelter, most homeless people would not be able to get into a shelter that night, and in fact may have tried earlier in the day and was not able to get in. But regardless of that discrepancy, the Santa Monica City staff tends to claim that we have this miraculous continuum of care approach to homelessness, and that all homeless people who do not enter into the continuum of care are in fact resistant to social services. But what homeless people find is that when they go to apply for social services, they don't qualify. You know, if they're not employable, if they're not ready to go to work tomorrow, you know, then most often they're turned down for that shelter bed. Most people reserve those shelter beds for people who are going to be successful in getting off the streets themselves. And so those people are the ones who are picked to survive, and then everyone else is left out on the streets to fend for themselves.
Well, it seems to me, talking with Jennifer Yellowhorse, and it seems to me, Jennifer, that what they're really trying to do here is a sort of a rather ambitious and visionary scheme. They want to take homeless people, for some reason, are resisting the tenth of a bed that each of them has a right to, that social service that they would go into. And what's helping them to resist is this sort of too much food. These people are being fed too much, so they don't go into the tenth of a bed per night that they're allowed. So that by cutting back on the food, this sort of encourages them to make more efficient use of that tenth of a bed. So it seems to me that you are, again, trying to sabotage a very important and key part of the continuum of care.
Absolutely. They feel, they being Santa Monica City Council incumbent and being anti-homeless contingent, feel that outdoor meal distribution programs are not connected to social services, and therefore, you know, they should be eliminated. And we're talking about grassroots people here. We're talking about real people who live in Santa Monica, who live in surrounding areas, who are concerned about poverty, and who have, no one's asked them to do it. You know, they have found a way to provide meals to the poor in an area like Santa Monica. Many of these programs serve meals in other areas. And basically what Santa Monica is saying is that you, as an individual, do not have the right to go out and feed people, anyone. Not distribute a sandwich to your neighbor. You can't see someone in need on the street and hand them, you know, your food. They're basically saying, leave it up to the social services.
We actually...
They're the professionals, and if the homeless don't want to go into social services, then they need to go to jail.
Well, of course. I think that goes without saying. We don't want sturdy beggars walking the streets and, you know, frightening the horses. That's sort of a traditional reality. I don't know where you come from, Jennifer, that you would challenge this established view. Actually, all kidding aside, the attempt to cut homeless people off from food services is a sort of an old tradition among some. I regard it as a liberal bureaucratic rather than a sort of a right-wing prerogative. We saw it happen in Santa Cruz here in 1989 when Marty Wormhout, who was then our mayor and now is our supervisor, sent in her police to terrorize people at the town clock, and then this went on for months and months as the health department invented bogus excuses, arrested people by the dozens, took them to trial, and so forth. Sandy Loringer here served, I think it was a couple of weeks in jail, and the same thing happened in San Francisco. Over 1,000 people were arrested with Food Not Bombs for serving free food. The mechanism used there was a court order, which is still in force, but of course people have ignored the court order, and the city, after I went to jail in 1996 up there for a month, and there were massive protests every day on the steps of the jail. They fed people breakfast. They backed off, with some exceptions. They've come back occasionally, and then strong people like Bernie Galvin and other Food Not Bombers, Sister Bernie Galvin, have stood up to them and had fasts, and so they have, you know, generally Food Not Bombs does serve there, and it does serve here, though we are getting some suspicious-looking health inspectors who are showing up at the Food Not Bombs meals, or did anyway, one meal. But what means are they using to try to, what's being proposed to restrict food distribution in Santa Monica, which, by the way, is a community of about, 100,000 on the outskirts of Los Angeles on the coast?
Yeah, 5,000 by the time the estimate, it's almost 100,000, mm-hmm. You know, give or take a few hundred tourists. And, yeah, I think that a lot of the enforcement strategy has been to use the health department in order to monitor and regulate food programs, but where that has failed is the fact that you cannot monitor a picnic. You know, the health department can't really come out and, you know, take a person who's having a picnic in the park and then, you know, test the temperature of their sandwiches.
So what are they doing to go after the food service?
Well, basically, what Santa Monica has done to get around that is to call the health department whenever there is a meal program going on. We had a very interesting altercation with a Santa Monica police officer, Officer Gardiner, who is a member of the HELP team, the Homeless Liaison Program, which is a unit of the police department that is specifically focused on targeting homeless people. And he went to the outdoor meal distribution programs and put in a call to the health department, and he actually went up in the line in front of everyone in the food line and went straight up to the food containers and stuck his finger in it to test the temperature. Now, seeing that that is a, you know, scientific method of, you know, testing the temperature of food and him knowing exactly what that temperature is, he decided that, you know, the meal itself was unsanitary.
Well, certainly afterward it was unsanitary, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, thanks to him it was. And so, you know, that type of approach we kind of weathered and came back to our attorneys, went to the health department and, you know, told them to back off, that they had, no right to come out and use these types of methods in order to, you know, regulate these people who were basically providing a picnic. Then Santa Monica came up with an ordinance that says gatherings of 150 or more people in the park would require a permit, a request to use the park, and would require a payment of fees along with a permit that would provide for, you know, park rangers being present on site. You'd have to pay for their time. You'd have to pay for the trash cleanup.
Is there any evidence or documentation of costs around police services and trash cleanup?
No, there hasn't been any real estimates. But then again, you know, the city department has, you know, put out this loose gray area language, and because food programs never obeyed that particular law, there was never a cause to actually come up with the real numbers that the city would expect. Basically, that ordinance has been kind of halted through the court process, so it's not currently being enforced. But I think that that's the reason why this particular ordinance is coming forward by city staff.
Because it's a new ordinance coming forward. You have a new ordinance coming up now. What is that?
September 24th, there is an ordinance, that the city staff is presenting to, Santa Monica City Council, basically strengthening the ordinance, the health food clause, health code clause, and, restricting access to the parks, and really making it a stronger piece of legislation. But also, interestingly, what staff is putting forward is another ordinance that bans people sleeping in doorways. And so between certain hours, if a homeless person is sleeping in a doorway and that doorway happens to be private property, generally what happens is that unless the property owner complains that they're, that someone is trespassing on their property, the police can't really do anything about it. But this ordinance would actually mean that a police officer can walk up to any individual, regardless of whether the property is private or public, and basically tell them to leave.
Do you have a lot of people sleeping in doorways?
Yes, we do. We have quite a number of people who may feel that the beach area is too cold to sleep in at night because it gets very windy over there, or a lot of women and elderly people who seek doorways as a safe place to sleep because they tend to be more public places and a lot more light. So, people tend to feel safer that they're not going to be attacked or something's not going to happen to them.
So it would actually become illegal for people who want you to be able to sleep in their doorway to allow you to sleep there?
It basically would be, because you would have to have written permission from the property owner in order to justify you sleeping there.
So it's good if they have the property owner doing it, but then you'd have to actually go to the landlord if you were a tenant and get the permission of the landlord to do that.
Absolutely.
So you could still actually get permission, but it would be more complicated and kind of time-consuming or difficult process?
Yeah, most people wouldn't be able to do so. And ironically, in Santa Monica, the biggest problem homeless people have had in sleeping in doorways is with churches. Most of the churches in Santa Monica will call the police on any homeless people who are found in their doorways or anywhere on their property sleeping. And so homeless people have had to, instead of seeking haven and shelter in the door of a church, are forced now to seek out businesses and storefronts that may have, space that is sitting there, and their vehicles in the parking lot and will, you know, turn their heads. They won't send out security in order to remove people out of their parking lot. But then again, you're talking about a situation where there's no access to restrooms, no access to, you know, basic life necessities. So therefore, people who would rush to Walmart or be referred by a police officer to Walmart would then be forced to create a situation that Walmart would then have to make a corporate decision about whether or not they'd want that type of presence.
You have a Walmart in Santa Monica that this would affect?
No, actually there is no Walmart in Santa Monica, otherwise people would go there. But there was a little strip of property that was actually owned by the Sears Company that is a little grassy knoll between the Santa Monica Place and Santa Monica City Hall. And it was kind of like a corner pocket area with a little bench in it that a lot of homeless people would tend to use as a place to rest between going to the beach or going to services or after a meal program. Or they might just hang out there for the day. It's close by to other businesses that have cheaper food, you know, fast food restaurants, and would have an access to a restroom in the near area. But the police department, you know, continually harassed people that were there. But Sears had expressed concern about allowing anyone to use that space. You know, they weren't saying, well, homeless people only could use it. But they were saying that, you know, it's a freedom of use space, so if anybody wants to use it, they can. And to force a company like that to specifically say, these homeless people are allowed to be here, and you would have everyone in Santa Monica going to that spot, and there would be 2,500 people crammed in this tiny little area.
Sounds like what they're doing in Santa Cruz to essentially eliminate street musicians, tablers, and homeless people from the business districts, and particularly the downtown area, though they have put one part of that law on hold until January. So tomorrow, I should say on Tuesday, you have this matter coming up at Santa Monica City Council. How do things look? I know you have, at least one green or sometime green member, Feinstein, on the city council.
Yeah, he is the mayor of Santa Monica.
How is he on the issue?
And he is shocked that, you know, the city council would unanimously, you know, move toward, you know, eliminating these meal programs. He feels that the conversation should coincide with the city's annual review of its coordinated plan, which, by the way, these ordinances are being kept separate from the review of social services in Santa Monica.
So is he alone in this opposition, or are there others who will join him?
There's one other council member. His name is Kevin McEwen, and he is up for re-election. And so he has the view that community members should be allowed to, you know, serve poor people. And, you know, he does believe that there are reforms that are needed in social services. And the rest of the council, especially those that are up for re-election, like Pam O'Connor, are the ones that are sponsoring and supporting this legislation.
Maybe you should move it to Pam's house. Move it to Pam's house, or maybe to the Department of Health. Have folks fed there and invite the Department of Health to come join and feed homeless people, or propose alternatives.
Absolutely. Or sleep on her doorway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but,
no.
Yeah, Pam O'Connor, she actually used to be a little more progressive in her stance. She's attended community softball games and picnics that have been sponsored by our organization in the past, and she's played ball with homeless people, softball. You know, so it's really shocking that she would turn on us this way. And instead of choosing community solutions to poverty, she is instead choosing to increase, you know, her coffers for re-election.
Now, wait a minute. We are in the middle talking with Jennifer Yellowhorse, and I have Santa Monica, who's fighting a Tuesday bill against the right to feed homeless people in parks and the right to allow property owners to, or I should say to allow those who are managing buildings to allow homeless people to sleep in doorways. And you're obviously some sort of a terrorist, Jennifer, because don't you understand, this is a part of the war on terrorism here. We want to eliminate homeless people from the possibility of being used as terrorist vehicles. So that we're in a crisis here, and I don't understand why you're opposing this. Don't you understand that?
Well, I was homeless for many years,
mm-hmm.
and I used to depend on the outdoor meal distribution program. In fact, I remember very clearly a time when I wasn't able to walk or to, you know, move around very far because I was suffering from a physical illness that prevented me from traveling, you know, from exerting a lot of, strength in order to get places. I was very weak, and I was sleeping out on the beach. And homeless people used to go to these outdoor meal distribution programs, and they would take a couple of plates and pack it away for me and bring it to me out on the beach. And that's how I survived for several weeks until I was able to get adequate health care in order to take care of that temporary disability. And then I started having to utilize the outdoor meal distribution program. Now, why an outdoor meal distribution program as opposed to an indoor agency? Well, most agencies would not allow you to take food out of the facility. Their times are at certain times of the day, and you do have to go and sign up for services and wait in long lines that basically take up and consume your entire day. And for most homeless people, they choose the outdoor meal distribution programs because they know what time it is, they get there, when the meal programs start, when they say that they're going to start, and they serve food. And then the homeless person can then leave. They're not bogged down by a useless process that isn't helping them. They take what they need, and then they go and they fulfill the rest of their day. And so for them, the outdoor meal distribution programs have a lot more freedom than the agency's version.
So,
and frankly, better food.
What can people here out of the area, we're 350 miles to the north, do to, you know, assist you in your struggle with the Santa Monica City Council on this issue?
Everyone can help us by contacting our Santa Monica City Council and our news media and voicing their opinion about these laws and even contacting your own City Council people and saying, this is what they're doing to people in Santa Monica. We don't want to see that happen here because ultimately what is going to happen if Santa Monica enacts this kind of law, whether or not it's constitutional, other cities will photocopy this ordinance and will use it in their own hometowns. Cities like San Diego, Santa Cruz, Sacramento, San Francisco. Everybody shares these laws. And so what we're really concerned about is that it doesn't come to a city near you, even if it does happen to affect us. So we encourage you to contact your legislators and say, you know, we want affordable housing. We want more access to food. We want better health care. And really make these demands because right now our government is focusing its efforts, all of its money and resources on this war on terrorism. And so there's plenty of money for poverty programs if they would just tax the rich.
Well, if folks want to get in touch with you, what I'm going to ask them to do is call the Huff line at 423-4833, and I'm going to ask you actually to leave a message on the Huff line for the phone numbers and email addresses of the Santa Monica City Council members or the City Council down there that you think, you know, we can best influence. And of course, go ahead.
People could also, I'll be happy to do that, or people can also contact me at makingchange@earthlink.net, and I could email them the information as well.
Right, so you can do research at makingchange@earthlink.net. Or people, if they miss this address, don't have a pencil, or want more specifics, can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. It's not going to be on the message when you call right now, but if you leave your name and phone number, I will get back to you later this afternoon and give you that information. We're talking to Jennifer Yellowhorse of Santa Monica, an activist who has been instrumental in pushing issues such as ranging from the right of homeless newspapers to survive. You're a writer and worker for Making Change. You fought off the big issue, the London-based monolith when it came, or megalith when it came to town, to taking over housing for homeless youth and struggling to keep shelters open. You went to jail for that as well. What other kinds of shenanigans are you up to these days?
Well, right now I Generating Station. And the Mojave Generating Station is in Laughlin, Nevada, and it is one of the dirtiest coal-fired generating stations in the United States. Caused a 50% reduction in visibility in the Grand Canyon alone, and it has caused the relocation of over 28,000 Navajo people. And so Edison is saying that you, the consumer, the electric consumer, or, you know, if you don't have electricity, then perhaps you, the person who is, you know, using electricity at any point in your life, actually needs to do the cleanup, and Edison can reap the benefits.
By last week, but any word on that? The kind of involuntary outpatient commitment bill that loosens the standards of commitment and essentially puts us all in the hands of the pharmaceutical industry if we're unlucky enough to be caught up in the toils of a mental health issue.
I'm not exactly sure where that bill is at, but I do believe that that is a very frightening piece of legislation, and we have a feeling that it is going to be used as a tool alongside with policies like the ones that Santa Monica is considering, which is banning food in public places and, you know, banning people sleeping outside, is that whoever doesn't grab a shelter bed now is just going to have to turn themselves into the police department, because the police will hunt people down and use this type of legislation to say, okay, well, we're going to commit you right here on site and basically throw people in jail.
I,
in the United States.
I think that works well. You see, what you do is you grab someone after having shut down the food programs and claim that they can't care for themselves, you see, because they don't have access to adequate food. So actually, I don't see why you're criticizing. This works very well together. I mean, you know, it's a way of dealing with the poverty problem and certainly of increasing our the viability of our shopping malls. I want to...
is sitting there and they cannot provide food for themselves, and if they're not going out and getting a job right this very minute, then it's obviously there's something wrong with them.
That's correct. I mean, there's a job and a living wage for anyone who wants one in this country, and I don't know what the problem is. We've been talking with Jennifer Yellowhorse of Santa Monica, California, fighting the Tuesday try to feed a homeless person a sandwich, go to jail law coming up at that city council, as well as let a person sleep in your doorway, get a ticket. Just you. Apparently, they can also just allow them to go after the management of the building, or just after the homeless person.
Just after the homeless person who is out there.
I see. Okay. Well.
And, Robert, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So Santa Cruz believes in distributing medical marijuana, but do they believe in distributing food?
They don't really believe in distributing medical marijuana. They believe in letting one favored group distribute it to 12 people, but denying 1,000 to 1,500 medical marijuana patients access to medical marijuana. That, unfortunately, is...
Oh, that's how it is.
Yeah, that's how it is. I mean, they like the idea of distributing medical marijuana, provided that it's Valerie and Mike Corral who are doing the distributing. Other medical marijuana clubs have essentially been criminalized in Santa Cruz, and I'm not criticizing the Corrals for doing their distributing. I'm glad they do, and they are certainly being badly victimized by the DEA, but people in Santa Cruz are not being served. If you tune in on this radio station, if you have a computer, and people can do that even in Santa Monica at www.microradio.net/FRSC. Again, www.microradio, one word, small letters, .net/FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can kind of follow this because we're going to be talking about this issue as we continue for the next hour and a half, 2 hours. Actually, we go till 1:30. Jennifer, thank you very much for calling in. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely, and it's really great to hear you, Robert.
Okay, it's good to hear you, too. Let's do it again, and I hope we get some good news, or at least, you know, rise up strong at that council meeting, and then, you know, well, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I hope you can get some protests going there, which will mobilize people of conscience against this. I know that they fought it back in Philadelphia, they fought it back in New York City, around churches being able to house people who were sleeping on their steps, and they fought it back, in San Francisco, and here in Santa Cruz, we're still feeding regularly. I guess you still are, too.
And we are going to be feeding a meal, all the outdoor meal distribution programs, along with the National Lawyers Guild, are going to be serving a meal on September 24th at the city council meeting before the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Of course, it has to be done regularly every day for it to make the impact it needs to make, and that's hard to do for those guys in business suits. But if you can get them out there once, at least it's something.
Absolutely.
Hey, thank you
very much, Robert.
Hey.
Well, hi there. I'm Senator Trent Lott of Mississippi. And as you know, I started the year off as the Senate Majority Leader. And now I let's just say no one even cares enough about me to send me anthrax. I mean, the best I got was a touch of salmonella. You know what? I'd still be in a powerful position today if it wasn't for one man. Well, Cape Town had Mandela. The Reds had Gorbachev. But in Vermont, we got Big Jim Jeffords. Boy, was he ticked off.
I had a fit. I up and quit. I made the Senate flop.
Now, can I ask the reason you'd resort to treason?
I got dissed at a photo op.
You don't ask OJ for a knife.
You don't bet on the Cubs to win.
You don't let Patsy Ramsey babysit your children.
And you don't mess around with Jim.
Well, Jim's enemies were right-wing, but stupid they were not. They sent some details in a few emails to Senator Trent Lott. They said, we only need one liberal to come over to the GOP. I said, our plan so far is an open bar, so we'll get Ted Kennedy. Yeah. Now you don't take off the Prince of Nepal. You don't take Lorena Bobbitt to bed. You don't marry Robert Blake and then go out to dinner.
Okay, but you can mess around with Ted.
Drawing a smiling face. I was facing the sidewalk.
Huh?
So I got him on that one.
You were refacing, not defacing.
Facing,
not defacing.
Smiling, refacing, smiling face. Listen, you're defacing. I'm drawing a smiling face. Come on, smiling face.
Now you have a court date October 1st?
The 1st or the 5th. I got it. The 5th. 5th of October.
Be sure to disqualify Mulligan. That's my advice. Go down there to the basement of the...
Come. I wasn't defacing. I was refacing the sidewalk.
He'll go, $162 fine. How should we settle this, sir?
I thought it was only $54.
That's for sleeping.
Oh.
Sleeping is one thing. Chalking with erasable chalk on the sidewalk is another.
Well, okay. I'll write him a rubber check.
Very good. That's a very good idea, Hutch.
And that's... That's one of numerous interviews which you're about to hear from the Tuesday medical marijuana demonstration, the largest protest at City Hall I've seen in about a decade. At least 500, some estimate up to 1,200 people, major media like I've never seen before. But the individual you just heard talking was Hutch, one of three individuals ticketed by police at one of the Merry Mondays, the Downtown for All throws. Downtown for All is an organization I work with which wants to reclaim public spaces for all of us downtown, not just for those with money, not just for those whom the redevelopment agency likes, not just for those who the police decide to give a pass to or the merchants decide have enough money and enough fashionable carriage to be down there. It's for everybody. The downtown should be for all of us. We've got to restore that. And every Monday at 4 o'clock, from 4 to 6 or sometimes even later, Downtown for All has a table. It has a video show. We show videos of past incidents, of interesting stories of other people who've had experiences downtown. We've shown videos of police abuse in Santa Cruz. And then there's usually debate between city council candidates, or I should say a speak out, where Steve Argue and Thomas Levitt and any other council candidate who wants to talk on issues of homelessness and poverty and public spaces downtown is certainly invited to come and talk. And Food Not Bombs feeds, and sometimes we even get a health inspector with their thermometer checking out the food. I don't think they stuck their finger in the soup. There's a little more subtlety here in Santa Cruz. They don't like to appear anti-homeless. That's why Christopher Crone did not use the H word throughout the entire discussion of the anti-homeless downtown ordinances. And when they came back on September 10th, he didn't talk about them at all, though everybody else preened themselves at the mic, and except Sugar, who wasn't there. I don't think he was there at that meeting. He didn't speak on them if he was. I don't think he was there. We have a terminally hypocritical city council and a terminally timid one. That's the problem. And it looks like it's probably going to get worse and before it gets better, but that doesn't mean we can't get better while they get worse. Again, Merry Mondays is coming up every Monday, happening tomorrow at 4 o'clock. You're invited to come down. People sometimes pick up this criminal chalk and start chalking, and Hutch, the fellow you just heard, was one of those who did. Let's hear some more interviews from this medical marijuana rally. I went around interviewing people and giving out flyers, trying to point out that the entire public puffery of the business, which I approve of people standing up in solidarity against the DEA, it's sort of like, you know, being against the axis of evil or something. I mean, it is elementary. Are people against the bubonic plague? Well, yes, that's for sure. But the question is, are they allowing the police to run around injecting people with bubonic plague anyway? That is to say, are they allowing police to harass people using medical marijuana? Are they destroying medical marijuana clubs? Are they refusing to support grow areas for medical marijuana? Are they maintaining this iron silence? And the answer is yes, there's nothing on the city council agenda at all to discuss this issue, even though it's clearly an emergency, and they need to pass emergency legislation. That's not on the city council agenda. That's not on Christopher Crone's agenda. That's not on Tim Fitzmaurice's agenda. It's not on Mike Rotkin or Cynthia Matthews' agenda. That's on Thomas Levitt's agenda. It's on Steve Argue's agenda. I don't think it's on Phil Baer's agenda. Let's hear some of these interviews.
And give us the story. What's your name?
My name's Nicole.
And who is this person with you?
This is Mandy.
And what are you two doing here in these colorful outfits?
Actually, we're here from Genesis 129 to represent and support the medical marijuana movement.
What is Genesis 129?
This is Genesis 129. Our farm just got raided by the DEA about 4 days ago at gunpoint. And they took all these 1,200 patients medical marijuana, and they took Robert Smitch to prison, to jail, not to prison.
He's currently in jail?
He's currently in jail.
Tomorrow.
Prison, excuse me, but his arraignment's tomorrow, so we're going to figure out what happens to him.
What is he being charged with?
We're not sure. We don't know until tomorrow.
Does he have an attorney?
They won't release any information. They won't let him call home. There's nothing that we know.
He's obviously a marijuana terrorist. He's been plotting to smoke out the president, probably.
No, he's been plotting to supply medicine to the patients.
We don't want these sick people to live. I mean, come on, let's get real here. Go ahead. how long has Robert been in this business?
Probably for a while.
A long time.
And how long have you been involved?
Quite a while. Probably for about a year and a half now.
And are you a patient yourself?
Yes.
And what is your condition?
I have eating disorders. And that helps me eat. It gives me an appetite.
And what kind of medication did you try before marijuana?
I didn't really try any medications before marijuana. I tried marijuana and it seemed to work okay. I didn't really want to put pharmaceutical products into my body because I don't really believe in it.
Now, did your local police, this up in Sonoma County?
Yes, sir.
You had something you wanted to say?
Yeah, they tried to prescribe things like Prozac and other things like that for eating disorders because they think that it has to do with the way that you think. And marijuana helps more with the appetite. You don't have to deal with pharmaceutical drugs, you know.
But you want to support your local pharmaceutical industry, don't you?
No.
No, that's a good point. Sonoma Police, did they cooperate with the DEA up there?
Not that I'm aware of.
Because Sergeant Tracy down here did.
Oh, really?
I mean, in the sense that they cleared away people from the road. Instead of arresting the DEA agents for moving in violation of the state constitution, which, as we know,
didn't do that.
Of course, no jurisdiction in California, as far as I know, no police jurisdiction has stood up to the federal authorities, but they need to.
Yeah.
That's what they need to do. So, what's happening tomorrow? There's going to be
an arraignment to decide what Robert Smith is charged with.
Where is this going to be?
In San Francisco. What was your name?
I'm Robert Norris.
Robert Norris, it was nice to meet you.
Thank you very much. We're here with three colorfully dressed, well, at least one colorfully dressed, well, two and a half colorfully dressed people, one completely uncolorfully dressed interviewer, well, talking with
Faustine
and
Holly
and
Maria.
And this is sort of the end of the medical marijuana scene where, is anything going to come out of this other than a nice publicity event for some public officials and one marijuana club? Is there anything more?
I think they're going to take it to the Supreme Court.
You think they're going to?
Take it to the Supreme Court.
Eventually. Right. Well, what about the immediate distribution of medical marijuana in Santa Cruz? What's going to happen here?
Well,
that's what I'm concerned.
I think that WAM will continue with what it's
WAM serves at most 250 people. What about the 2,000 people who need it here in Santa Cruz?
I don't know. I mean, I think that everyone should be growing it in their backyard.
Good advice.
Grow two or three plants, and you've got it made. Keep it covered under, a little greenhouse.
The council could immediately announce, as San Francisco is looking to an initiative, they're going to put aside land to grow marijuana. Also, they could instruct their police not only not to support the DEA or the CNET or whoever is running in to do their silly drug war stuff, but they could say, you are to specifically arrest any federal agents who come on this property, anybody who's unauthorized.
They could do that.
They could try. They could demand that the feds go first to a court to get a finding that the state California Constitution is overruled by some provision of the U.S. Constitution. But you didn't hear a word about that from any of the public officials today.
I didn't hear anything.
No, they don't say shit. They're here for the cameras. And unfortunately, I'm also concerned that the Corral organization has not been particularly inclusive in terms of allowing other medical marijuana groups to be involved. For example, Andrea Tischler's group offered to come here today, distribute medical marijuana to people with cards. She was instructed by Valerie Corral not to come because this was her event.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Anyway, so I have to grumble a bit, but I must say I like your hat.
Thank you.
Any other comments that any of you wish to make in the face of this tirade?
I think the world will know a little bit more about it now, and that is worth something.
It is certainly worth something, and I can't deny that. Anything else?
Legalize it. It's an herb.
That's right. Free the weed! So, we're here with
my mother Kay, and we're here representing Genesis and supporting WAM.
And your name is?
My name is Kerry Mitchell.
And you're holding a picture of?
This is Robert Schmidt, who was arrested last week in Sonoma County.
He goes to arraignment tomorrow.
We
don't know what the charges are?
No, not for sure. They're saying that he assaulted federal officers, but the man's dying from asbestosis. He's not even that healthy of a person to be doing something like that. It's just an excuse to keep him in jail without bail. It's one of their little ploys. So as far as we know, he's being charged with cultivation and assaulting a federal officer.
Did local police collude in this arrest?
Well, the local sheriff's department's narcotics task force was there, and which he had been basically given a green light by the Sonoma County as the only bona fide medical marijuana dispensary in Sonoma County. He was state licensed as such, and had even replied as a research group to the DEA. And they had never told him to cease and exist. They let him do this for 6 years, by the book, paid his taxes, took care of 1,200 patients. He was growing less than three plants per patient. And they've come and arrested him now and taken him away, Gestapo's methods, and we don't know where he's at.
How many patients does this affect?
1,200.
Has some other network formed to help those patients in the interim?
Well, this is the second one that they've shut down there, so we've actually picked up patients from the other club that they had shut down previously. Now, as far as we know, there's only maybe one or two that are still working there, and it's hard to say whether or not they can fill the needs of the patients.
Andrews has been a division of clubs. So, for example, one club, Valerie Corral's club, favored by the city council, has gotten special treatment. The other clubs have essentially been criminalized. Do you have a similar division there, or have all the clubs been sort of getting together?
Well, they've been kind of left alone. The only ones that have really bothered them has been the federal government. It hasn't been, has not been the locals. And the one, and the people that they have arrested and taken to court, they beat it in court. And the people there have decided that this is not right for them to be doing it for the citizens of Sonoma County. So the district attorney has lost his seat. He has been defeated and being replaced because of these high-profile cases that he's taken to court and lost over the approval of the voters of Sonoma County. I think it was 74% of the people of Sonoma County voted it in. And so far as I know, they're pretty much leaving us all alone to an extent, but who knows for sure.
And then they
crushed it. No, we can have 99 plants per patient and 3 pounds in our possession at any given time per patient.
But that was not what happened when this bust took place, which was?
The 12th of September, 5 days ago.
And I guess you were this. There was another club that happened around the same time that was also busted.
Not in our area that we're aware of. Just the Petaluma club.
Right. I think it was. I guess maybe it was another. Maybe it was.
I think it was a few months ago.
But, I mean, I'm thinking of not so much in your area, but between the time of the WHAM bust and the Genesis bust.
Well, I've been told that there's 38 medical marijuana arrests by the DEA in California since 9/11 of this year.
38, and that includes, a number of clubs?
Probably a number of clubs throughout California.
And your name again is?
Harry Mitchell.
How long have you been working to decriminalize marijuana for medical purposes?
For at least the last 10 years, I found out what they were doing here. I used to live in Monterey County, and then I moved to Sonoma County, and I've been a patient myself for the last 3 years. And then also my mother. I've got 4 bulging discs in my neck. I've got degenerative disc disease, and I've had 3 operations in the last 2 years.
And you're not a wild and crazy pothead.
No, I'm not, and I don't even drink.
Although you should have a right to be a wild and crazy pothead, Frank.
That's what I need to do for my medical condition, and I should be allowed to do that.
Damn right.
My constitutional and civil rights to do that.
Hey, how can people get more information about the Sonoma situation at Genesis?
They can go to www.genesis.com. Genesis 1.29. Genesis 129.
So it's www.genesis129.com?
Yes.
Okay. And I guess we hope you're, obviously. Good luck tomorrow, man.
Thank you.
Fuck these assholes.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Thank you. We're talking with.
Huh?
Come on now.
Hey, this is Kutalata.
And what are you here for today? And it looks like things are breaking up.
Hey, I must admit, it is socially motivated as well as cause related.
Is this your attempt to support the political career of Mike Rutkin and Tim Fitzmaurice?
No.
Glad to hear it. Because I noticed there was a whole fleet of city council politicos just lapping up the publicity.
Oh, well, I think we all were.
I was, yeah. Above all that, I want you to know.
Oh, yes. Oh, no doubt. Well, you know, people need something to rally around, and this is definitely quite an occasion.
A circus
with a cause.
Will anything substantial come out of this in terms of changing local city policy? We can inveigh all day at the DEA, that rhymes. But can we change the minds of Fitzmaurice and the gang on the city council about letting other clubs actually exist in Santa Cruz?
Well, I don't know what's been going on lately because I got, just basically pushed to the back voluntarily. And there's a whole bunch of people out there that are just having to do it without getting a card because they can't afford a goddamn card for whatever it is now. I was lucky, got one for 1 year for $60, but I don't want to spend $60 on a card. I won't even spend $60 on a card.
You're talking about WHAM.
And then you get on a list, and who knows where those names end up, So there's a whole deal, and if you're not dying, then you don't have the visuals to be on the front lines of WHAM,
If we're talking with...
Hi, I'm Katie Steinman.
Katie, you're actually a patient yourself.
Yes, I am, but not at WHAM.
And what club are you a patient of?
The Oakland Cannabis Buyers Club.
And have you ever been a user of any of the other Santa Cruz clubs?
I was involved with the SCCP, but it got shut down. That was a couple years ago.
That was the Santa Cruz...
Cannabis Pharmaceuticals, yeah.
That's actually been a rather serious gripe of mine. In fact, Andrea Tischler offered to come here with medical marijuana and distribute it to non-club members, I'm sorry, to non-WAM members who had club cards. I was told by, apparently told by Valerie not to do that. So this has simply been sort of a one-person show. Did you have trouble getting your card up in Oakland? Or?
I didn't have a lot of trouble with it. It was expensive, though. It was about $125. No, it was about $250 because I had to pay $200 to see a doctor to get the prescription written, and then it was $25 for the card and $25 for processing fee type stuff. So it wasn't that hard to get the thing, but it was hard to come up with the money for it.
Now, did you need that card before you did your stint with the Santa Cruz Pharmaceuticals?
No, I didn't. They had a different deal where I brought in a letter from my doctor confirming that I had fibromyalgia, and the doctor there just wrote me a recommendation or something like that, and I got a card from them without having to pay that much money.
Now, have you heard the criticisms that the Corral group has essentially monopolized the scene here? And in essence, the club you were a part of was driven out of business because the city council favored that one group and didn't essentially allow any other group to, well, actually didn't allow even the WAM group to be legal. The WAM group distributes differently than the Santa Cruz Cannabis Pharmaceuticals. I've been saying this all day a lot because I am outraged, and I'm glad that there's publicity on DEA attacks on any club. But I resent the fact that one group seems to be monopolizing all the limelight and is not pressing for changes in the local law that might allow not just 250 of Valerie Corral's favored patients to be served, but the 1,000 to 2,000 people who need the medical marijuana in the area.
Well, I don't really know very much about political pressure going on in that way, but I do think that personally, groups like WAM, I think are very, very necessary, and I don't want to do anything to jeopardize those groups, and I feel that I have the ability to go further away to get my medicine if I need to, but there are a lot of people who don't, so I don't really have that much of a problem with those people getting priority over me.
Right, but there are many people who don't have that lucky situation you do, and they are forced to seek for their medication, I'm told, in unsavory places because one group wanted a monopoly on what's going on in town.
Well, that I don't think is right, but again, I don't really know that much about the situation.
But you're here supporting the right of people to get medical marijuana.
Yes, I am. Because I think anybody who's known somebody who really needed to use marijuana as a medicine knows how wonderful it can be, and it's just a crime to take it away from people.
Anything you want to tell us about what's happening up in Oakland?
I don't really know much about what's happening up in Oakland. Every time I go there, they've got plenty of stuff and no problems. I know that they're supported by the city, but they're, of course, not completely legal. It's been a very positive experience for me going to that club.
How much medication do you need to take each day to deal with your problem is?
Fibromyalgia.
Which is?
It's kind of like a form of arthritis. It's an autoimmune disorder. It causes a lot of chronic pain, muscle, nerve, joint pain. I have a lot of migraines.
Are you in pain right now?
Not at the moment because I took my medication before.
You look a little high there, big girl.
Not really. Not too bad.
She gives a good hug, I got to tell you that.
Yeah, so, for me, I'd say it's hard to say how much in a day because it depends. It's one of those things that some days are worse, some days are better, but usually I go through about an eighth a week.
And how much does that cost you?
Depending on what kind of deal I get, anywhere between $40 and $60.
And is this unusually potent marijuana?
No, not really. It's about the same quality as I got on the street.
And did you smoke this?
Yeah. Well, I also have a vaporizer, which helps a lot because, after you smoke for a long time, you start having chest problems, chest congestion problems.
I guess lung cancer is a problem as well.
Yeah, well...
And you smoke anything, although I hear less of a problem than with tobacco.
Well, yeah, but if they would just go ahead and make it completely legal, they could develop ways for us to take our medication. We wouldn't have to put our lungs at risk.
Now, do you ever engage in recreational marijuana use? DEA, take note.
Oh, well, in the pursuit of honesty, yes.
Officer, over here.
I'm sorry, I can't lie. Yes, I do, but I think that, frankly, it should be legal, and I think we should follow Canada's lead.
Thank you. Anything you want to add?
No, that's it. Have a good day.
Hey. We're talking to the evil genius who subverted this event with a, should we say, less than
appropriate
PA system. Your name, sir?
I'm Gene Wills, Ranger Gene.
Oh, you were Gene before he changes his name.
Now I'm going to change my name and move to another town where people don't know me and I can start doing PA again.
Now, how many people would you estimate were here?
Oh, there had to be 500, I know. And I couldn't see very well because I was down on the ground setting up microphones and stuff. But they tell me that this entire area out front here was completely packed and that they couldn't hear a thing. Luckily, the media was able to put all their microphones around our little speakers, and so it got recorded and it got broadcast live. But it was only good for the first few rows of people, unfortunately.
We will take care of you later.
I've got it coming, I'll tell you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I came from Seattle, Washington, man. Give a damn by the mayor, man. I get damn by my life, man. The mayor ain't doing shit for my life. He saved my life, man.
Try to ask a question of the mayor.
I take 215
Christopher Crown
pills, man, a day, man. You ain't doing shit for my life, man. You ain't doing shit for my life. I came from Seattle, Washington to be right here, right now.
Because it's the mayor he needs to talk to, because it's the mayor who's not doing
Damn,
anything.
Man, the mayor ain't doing shit, man. No, he ain't trying shit, man.
He's having a publicity moment. That's what the mayor is doing. It's been a publicity moment all day.
I'm sorry, but hey, I'm mad. I'm dying.
There are, some people would say the mayor is doing stuff. And what is he doing?
Well, he stood up for Wham in today, and he's on global news.
But every single city council member, what does that mean if there is no medical marijuana distribution to people like this in this town? What does that mean?
I'm turning heel. I'm dying.
Well, my angle is complete legalization of marijuana, and I've got my own kind of like agenda. We need to get 1 million signatures next October to put it on the ballot and completely legalize it.
But he can call an emergency meeting of the city council and start a distribution system tomorrow. But there is no intention of Mayor Crone to do any such thing. This is a symbolic one-time event. And it makes me very angry that people, even other people from other clubs who are willing to come and distribute marijuana, were told to stay away from this event. It is a special event for Valerie Corral. No, we have people in this town who need medical marijuana, not politicians who need publicity and need to answer questions from high school students. That's my concern about this issue.
Well, I mean,
everybody's question, really. In Alaska. Grow up freely, man. Alaska, you grow up freely. A part of the United States, man. Hey, man, why can't they have it right here, man?
I mean,
just like Alaska,
I mean,
man.
Just a single action by the mayor that would be actually legislative would be meaningful. But there is no meaningful action being undertaken by this mayor. That's the problem. And the sad
because
thing is, he's the best one in the bunch. The mayor here, he's the best of the entire city council. But he won't take any meaningful action.
The mayor wants
like I said, I'm involved with the legalization of it,
which we would agree to.
Yeah, and I hear you. I just definitely, on a surface level, at least he's doing something. But
all he's doing is he is
scratching the surface. That's it.
You know, there is no
tonight
he could declare a special city council meeting, get the council together, and say we need to establish, like San Francisco does, grow areas. They'll be protected by our police.
County needs it too.
Yeah. He could do that. He could propose it. He could propose that the police will be directed not to cooperate with the DEA. He could propose that there be a medical marijuana emergency that allows clubs. He could propose these things, but not a single one of these things is being proposed.
Excuse me. Can I ask you something? Yeah. Can I ask the mayor something to give him some? Mayor.
Haven't been able to watch CNN, so I kind of. But.
Southworth.
Right. Good to see you.
I want to know, what are you going to do for me? I'm dying, man.
Yeah.
I'm taking 215 pills, man.
You hear the man ask the mayor a direct question.
I'm dying, man. Hey, weed, pot, keeps my appetite up. Pills don't, government don't. What you can do for me, I'm dying, man. I got 4 years left.
Yeah.
4 years left. What are you gonna do for me, Mayor? Santa Cruz? What are you gonna do for me?
Were you here today? Did you see what was going on here today?
I'm here right now.
No, I know.
I'm asking you right now, what are you gonna do for me? What are you gonna do for me? Well, what?
And more to the point, what are you going to do for the patients throughout the city of Santa Cruz? Are you going to hold a special session of city council to ask that, like in San Francisco, public land be set aside so that marijuana can be grown there? Are you going to direct the police?
I think it's kind of like what you and I always talk about, when the people lead, the leaders will follow. And I think today the patients led. And the leaders showed
up.
So
you're going to throw a special council session, is that right?
I think the next step is in accordance with the WAM cooperative.
Are you dying, Mayor?
WAM has 250 members. There are 1,000. There are 1,000. He's got to go, everybody. When the questions are asked, he has to go. See? There are 1,000 to 2,000 marijuana patients in town. And only 250 of them can be served by WAM. But this mayor was refusing to hold a session to deal with that issue. They could deal with it tomorrow in a special council session. You know, other counties have. Why isn't it that simple? Can you?
There's a lot of other issues that are going on. I don't think that they could set aside one tomorrow. I think that that's what they're working toward. He voted for Proposition 22, so he's not a vote.
Well, but he didn't have a chance to vote. I mean, we all voted for it as members. As a council member, he's been silent for 4 years on the need to set up growing areas, on the need to have a medical marijuana emergency, on the need to hire doctors who could prescribe medical marijuana. He has the power to at least introduce these resolutions. When these issues come up, he walks away. And it's not just today. It's whenever these issues come up. He is a politician. And it's very nice that he stands here and supports Valerie Corral and WAM, and I support them too in that regard. But I don't support the fact that one organization with 250 members is the only group in a town where there's 1,000 to 2,000 people who need medical marijuana, at least.
And we're taking a phone call now from the irredoubtable Thomas Levitt, city council candidate. Hey, Thomas.
Hello.
Thomas, you've been listening to this dialogue from Tuesday at the city council's brouhaha and media extravaganza.
Mm-hmm.
Any comments?
Well, I think that what we have is a city council that's long on symbolic progressive politics, which is there's a place for that, and very short on substantive reform. There's a long list of things that the city council has done which are important symbolically, but which don't actually have much teeth when you look at them closely. The city council's support for the infamous conservation camping, for example, total and complete waste of time. Nobody's utilized it. Everybody knew that nobody would utilize it.
This was, of course, the proposal, which was a minor reform to the sleeping ban, the camping ban.
Right.
Instead of finding real places for Camp Paradise in the fall of 2001 and the winter and spring, they passed this resolution, which allows Parks and Rec to, with $1 million worth of insurance and 8 other conditions, to allow groups to camp for 2 weeks in one of 3 city parks, and that has never been used, although I think the Santa Cruz Service Corps, when it was in existence, was trying to initially arrange to do that, but they were running into roadblocks with the then-director of the Parks and Rec, Jim Lang.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one example of what you're saying of lack of substantive action.
And then again, we have the ADU reform ordinance. That's the granny shack reform thing that would potentially make it easier and less onerous to actually build one of these things legally. And there exists all through the city illegally, and nobody's willing to admit that. But legally speaking, less than 10 units of this type per year have been built over the last decade, and the city's quote-unquote general plan says that a maximum of 25 should be built. And so in this last cycle, they implemented a series of token reforms which won't produce a substantial increase in the rate at which these things are built, again, so they can say they've been progressive on housing issues.
And more important, they're not even grannying in or amnestying the existing ADUs.
Nobody wants to even talk about those things. Nobody even wants to discuss them. Nobody wants to acknowledge they exist. I mean, you know, Mark Premack said to me once, you know, if we actually started enforcing our own, you know, existing rules and regulations regarding housing, probably half, like 50% of the city's housing stock would be declared illegal. I don't know if it's that high, but it's like this giant kind of like, you know, head in the sand phenomenon where nobody's willing to, like, you know, deal with what's actually happening, and we all want to politically pretend that these things don't exist, that this isn't happening.
Now, you are going to be, I guess, coming to Merry Monday, the Downtown for All event, tomorrow at 4
mm-hmm.
o'clock, which has, you speak at it regularly,
mm-hmm.
and you're also, I presume, be probably showing up at the City Council meeting on
mm-hmm.
Tuesday. Anything on that agenda that you think is of note for people to be aware of? I know you tried to get an issue discussed regarding, the mayor left the room when you raised your issue on the consent agenda last
right.
time. You want to talk a little bit about that and what's coming up this time?
Well, what's coming up is, among other things, is, another important but symbolic, you know, effort to have the city declare its opposition to the war on Iraq,
mm-hmm.
which is a totally valid and legitimate exercise.
And way overdue, I might add. The Berkeley has imposed the war on, the pseudo-war on terrorism and use of force in Afghanistan.
Right.
And the city council refused to bring this up to any kind of vote.
Yes, previously in the fall, the city council did not have the political will to oppose the war on terrorism and the bombing of Afghanistan when a lot of people were opposed to that.
I like to call it the phony war on terrorism.
There are a few items which I was not able to research up to this point in any detail, which I found interesting on a consent agenda. I don't recall them off the top of my head because it was a couple of days ago when I reviewed it.
Well, maybe what we can do, Thomas, we're talking to Thomas Levitt, the city council candidate, is have you call in toward the end of the show because this will be on for another hour and a half, and you come up with some of the items. I too, have looked over the consent agenda, and I found a few items. I finally got a copy of the resolution that is actually going to be presented by Scott Kennedy, Tim Fitzmaurice, and Christopher Crone at city council. I'm going to read that on the air shortly so people can actually hear it. You can't get it if you go on the internet. It's not there, but apparently it was sent out on the
Senator's progressive email list.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, one thing I'd say is that if you want to really keep an eye on what the politicians are trying to do, watch what's going through the consent agenda, because that's, you know, where
That's the agenda that shows up every second and fourth Tuesday at the 3 o'clock session. Hopefully, Thomas, you'll be able to give us a kind of a summary of what to keep an eye on. I'm gonna roll, but I hope that you listen in and call in because we have two employees from the SEIU
right.
coming in, and there's also apparently, according to today's Sentinel, at least, some serious dispute about the validity or the sufficiency of the contract. Do you have any comments on that before we proceed?
I haven't taken a look at the Sentinel yet. I'll have to
read
it and get back to you.
Do that. And people want to reach you. If people want to reach Thomas Levitt and his campaign, you can give a call to 425 3646, 425-3646. That's Levitt for City Council. You can also contact the Argue for City Council candidacy at 457-9754, extension 1169. If you miss any of these numbers, you can give a call to the very simple and easy to remember number, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, group I work with. We meet every Wednesday at 8:30 in the morning at Baker's Square at 1105. Is it 1107? It's on Pacific. I mean, it's on the ocean, and it's right across from the gas station down there. So 1107, I think it is, Ocean Street. Well, let me, in fact, pass on this City Council resolution that is coming up. And if people want to call in, by the way, you certainly can. It's 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and that's what you're tuned to, 96.3 FM. And I'm giving the computer a chance to catch up with me, and I will then read you this resolution that we'll have coming up at 5 o'clock on the City Council agenda. It's not the consent agenda, it's sort of the, I think it's the administrative agenda, and it's also on the Santa Cruz Progressive Female list. It reads as follows. A resolution of the City Council of the City of Santa Cruz opposing U.S. military action against Iraq, whereas the people of the United States have already suffered grievous loss of life and well-being as a result of a terrorist attack on September 11, 2001, and whereas the Bush administration is waging a propaganda campaign against the regime of Saddam Hussein to justify war by the United States against Iraq, and whereas the Bush administration has failed to present convincing evidence that Iraq poses a military threat to the United States, and whereas former UN weapons inspectors, other experts, and world leaders have contested the Bush administration's claim that indisputable evidence exists of Iraq's present possession of nuclear weapons and immediate ability to deploy such weapons, and whereas a war to remove Saddam Hussein is the most credible scenario that would cause Iraq to use any weapons of mass destruction it might possess, and whereas the United States already has conducted